Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we have a very interesting book. It is called I, the letter I. And you say, what does that really mean? I know who I am. I know what I'm going to do. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's all about me. It's all about my life, my path, what I can get, how I can command it, and how I can attract it or bring it to me. We see so many gurus this day, and we say, what is the I all about? You need to have passion. When you have passion, you can command the world. When you have energy, you can get out there and bring things to you. You can create and make things happen. Is it? I don't know. What great thing we've always done on this radio show is ask questions. It's not always about having solutions or templates or saying, follow me, or this is the way, and everyone needs to fall in line, and this is the way to whatever you're looking for. Really, what we're doing is asking questions so you can creatively become the you that you were meant to be. So it's really about being able to say, how can we exist as a unique being in this universe? Today, my guest is Wael Boron, and his book again is I. Wael, thanks you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It's my honor to be with you and your audience. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a, yes, we're doing fine, and it's been a day. And don't you think, Wael, that many people have said they're stuck in the I mode, you know? They're like, whatever I have to do. I've even seen this with people on the spiritual path there. I'm going to walk in the light. I'm not going to have any darkness. I'm going to be this. And they diss the rest of the universe around them. And I'm going, well, holy crap, where you think you're going, right?
Yes. I can hear you. I love your words. Your introduction is very beautiful. And I admire the way that you are advising your audience to live their life by questioning, not living under the answers. The answers that we have now, that you are living under now, it's the answer of questions for somebody else. He questioned the answers. He had the question first, then he has the answer, and we're living under that. I think we need to rebel against this once in a while.
Right. You know, I think the idea that to believe that people are saying, know your truth. And what happens is truth ends up being dogma. And when we have dogma, then we have things that are can be reproducible, can be give you validation, and things that then further limit you and put you in a silo and kind of give you a label. I think we get stuck in that, and then we say, but this is me, right?
Right, and the book I is about that. The book I is about you, that make sure that you have a conscious choice in your life. Now, it will encourage you to move a bit from the place that you are now, and to go to another place, another angle, to look to your life. You look to your relation with yourself, with the other, with your God, and think, Am I really was living the life that I want? Did I make that choice to live this way? Or that was, I just follow the others? And after you do so, you have the whole right to get back where you were, or you start to think, I want to live with another way.
You know, I think it's very important, right in the beginning of your book, you really say about searching for questions. I think the world right now is at a point of transformation, if you choose to take it on, and evolution, and say that things are changing and I want on that bandwagon, versus saying I'm just going to sit it out and let everybody else do it. I think what's so wonderful, and again, to the listeners, to always say, it's a wonderful book to check out his book. Again, it is the link is on the bottom of today's show page, where you can find out more information. But also, right in the beginning of the book, it says, thoughts are often like comets. They glow briefly, then they are gone. And do you know how many times I do that? Something I will like pass through, and it's like, it's almost like a dragonfly. It shows up, I see it, and then all of a sudden it's gone, yes?
Yes, it sure happens. It happens to me all the time. That's why we got the idea. One of my friends, actually, who put me the idea that we need, the book is about stimulating your questions and your thoughts. So before it fly, as you say, there is a part in the books about, I think, 40 stop or something, that you need to, stop and write what is in your mind now, what you feel and what you think, and you write it. After you finish the book, you will have about 40 pages that you wrote, and these 40 pages is your textbook. It contains a very, very important dialogue. This dialogue is between you and you, and this dialogue is very precious because it will be as you are having conversation with your inner self. And this is questions, dialogue, thoughts, that is very precious.
And it's very important to note what comes up and to not judge it, to not give it shame or guilt, or just say, I'm going to self-edit myself, you know, before as you put it down. You know, when I read the books all the time from authors, I'm underlining and writing in the margins as I read it, and I find that that really is a great reflection to be able to say, this is what came up for me today. And I definitely believe your book is a great path for that, because this journey you and I are going to go on now to share, today we're talking about self-centeredness in the world, and we will have a second show where we'll be talking about God-centrism. And it's very important to say, what does these words really mean? And I'd love to go on that journey, yes?
Yes, yes. I absolutely agree with you. And I can think we have a small metaphor that can explain this, the difference between self-centeredness and God-centrism. You know that our solar system, which contain the sun and other planets, and we know that the sun, the other planet is surrounding and having a moving around the sun. The sun is our solar system center. So we have some existential questions about what I have to do with me, with the other, with God. So on the self-centeredness paradigm, myself is like the sun. It is in the center. The other and God and everything else is surrounding and moving around myself.
Right.
On the God-centrism paradigm, the sun is God. The center of my life is God. And myself and the other and everything else is going, moving, surrounding God. So it is a bit confusing because we have the same component in the two choices. But the order of how I put it and how I put it, that means that I took the decision to do so. either I choose to be self-centeredness, myself is, or my self-will is before God's will, or I will choose the path of God-centrism, and that will be God's will before my self-will. These right. two paths are in the beginning, it's like each other, like they are very near to each other, but it's like the delta of any big river. They start to go when they start to go the branches of the delta, they are so centimeters between each other, some inches, but after a bit there are hundreds of kilometers, hundreds of miles between each other. So it's two way to live, and it's two way to look to yourself, how's your relation with the other, how your relation with God, how the relation with your religion, how it's about a lot of things. So,
and it's, don't you think also, too, that it's also about, I've said on this show many times, is we did not just get dropped from a stork. There aren't storks flying over and dropping people off on the earth. In other words, there's got to be something bigger. There's got to be something more powerful. There has to be something that brings all of this together. I mean, we can't to say that, oh, I am existing because I need to have a big obituary and to be able to say that I'm here so that I, you know? And, you know, and you go, is that such a limiting belief of the universe? And in the other paradigm, it's that we are then part of the universe being very, you know, in contrast to a silo existence. So in other words, do you want to live a life of potential and to be part of the bigger picture in the universe and in creation? Or do you want to believe that you're here so that you could have so many kids, have a degree, and be able to put the label on yourself? Yes?
Beautiful words. I want to build on these beautiful words. I think we need, all of us, we need to ask ourselves some existential questions. First, I need to re-question myself. If there is a God or not, if there is a God, there is a way to live. If there is not a God, this is another choice. This, it's always a way to live. After that will become another major question. What religion I want to go in? By the way, the book is not about religion at all. It's about God, not about religion. It's a bit confusing. And I think between these two questions, because these two questions they are in the light. We are dealing with them day and night. So the questions not forgotten. I think there is a forgotten question, very important one, between the two questions is about God and self. Mm-hmm. Am I going to have God as my God, or am I going to have self as a second God? When I have this question and try to find the answers, everything else will change. Mm-hmm. My way to live, my relation with my kids, my spouse, my neighbor, with the other, which is most important, will have a different path.
Because also, too, I think the idea of many times people will say, I believe or I have God in my life, and yet that's only for Sunday, you know? And then the other 6 days of the week, they kind of live for themselves. And it's sort of like a passive kind of engagement in their lifetime versus an active engagement in their existence. Yes?
Great. And I want to make it more blunt. When the self, when we are living under self-centeredness paradigm, what we do consciously or unconsciously, that we boxing in God in the synagogue, in the church, in the mosque, and we go and visit him there, but we don't invite him to our life. We live our life without him. When we want to visit him, so we go to these holy places to visit him and get some spiritual support. So in this case, we are using God as a yoga training, as a meditation, which are both very beautiful things. But God's not like that. gets much bigger, much resourceful, and much, much, much bigger than that. If I'm going to really choose to worship God, I have to live as the God that I choose. And he asked me to live, to be with him in every step. I need to feel that he is by my side in every step. Mm-hmm. I always like the metaphor of the baby and the mother. You know, the baby, when we are 3-4 years old, he feels safe. Even who is playing with his friends, he feels safe that to feel that his mother is there looking for him, looking out for him. This relationship or this feeling is very, very beautiful. I think we are losing this beautiful support when we are boxing in God in these holy places and don't inviting him to in our life.
Because I think also, too, the concept sometimes comes up of using God as a tool. In other words, you're asking for something, and then when you get it, it's like, oh, good, I got it. And then you think of the I as having got it or accomplished something. And then when we have a problem, or if we look at we hit a wall or something very drastic happens in our life, events, we say, oh, God must have left me because he isn't sheltering me. He isn't taking care of me. He isn't doing all the things that I expect someone to do for me. You know, in other words, God should be this person or this energy of the universe should always support me and everything should be hunky-dory. Yet when I hit a wall, oh, well, they must have left, right?
Again, it's a very narrow point
right.
of view to look like God like that.
Right.
Because God is with us. God is with me now who I'm talking to you. God is with you now in the other town. And God with every one of your listeners and your audience right now. He is with us.
Yeah.
Either we know that or aware of that or not. But he is there watching and listening and with us, taking care of every one of us. Even taking care of people who doesn't believe that he exists. He is taking care of all of us. If I'm not aware of that, this is our problem. This is our challenge that we need to overcome.
And I think that's exactly what we're doing is we're proposing the stories, we're proposing where some others may have felt stuck or where they may have felt that these are some of the questions when we start going along this journey of finding out what's more important in life and finding out the bigger questions. So these are definitely questions, and what we're saying is keep asking these questions because each question will lead you to another, and it's exactly the great path we're on within your book. And also, too, let's talk for a second. You know, when people say, oh, well, there isn't a God, do you think that potentially they are just saying, I choose not to believe in a religion as dogma, however, somehow I believe that there is some other power?
I believe this is a fair question and a fair choice, but I think we need to clarify some things to be fair in our choice. That some people are choosing that there is no God because they don't like what religious people do, what religions is dead for them. But I think here we need to separate between three things, between God and the religion and the people who are following this religion. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people throughout the history have been misusing the religion for their own benefits. So other people say, if this is what religious people are, so I don't want this religion and I don't want the God that they are advocating. This is not right. We are falling in a trap here. The religion is, under God's centrism, religion is the way to God. It's the path. It's like a manual, how to live your life. Some people can misuse it. Some people can use it right. But this is not anything to do with God itself. So I'm just asking the people who doesn't believe in God in this book, if just read the book, And after, you still have your choice not to believe in him, but to make sure that you have a conscious decision that you choose there is no God, out of clear mind, you don't have a lot of vendetta, or you don't having this decision upon the people who say that we are following God by this religion or this religion or this religion. If you make this decision without this burden, I respect that.
Let's talk for a second about, you share in your book about you and yourself. I think sometimes we get stuck there, and people say, we always ask the question, who am I? Or and then people come up with all of these labels and mantras of what they believe. And then sometimes something will happen and they'll be stripped of that identity. And that's when they seem to settle into a core and be able to say, well, I guess I wasn't all of those things. This is who I am. And that's the core that we're looking for. Yes?
I think me and myself and you and yourself are not one. Self is part of us. There is always, when we have in any situation, there is a voice in our mind is talking to us, telling us to do so and so and so. At the same time, there is another voice telling us to do another path in the same situation. So there is always sounds in our mind talking to us. We are not that voice. We are not that self. It is a part of us. We are much bigger than that. We have a self, we have a soul, we have a mind, we have a heart, we have a body. We have a lot of components. Mm-hmm. And the self itself had generals. It had the individual ego and the collective ego. And these two generals are doing their job very good when the self is in command. Mm-hmm. And when they are in command, they tell us to do things to protect us, to save us. And they are right, because we brought them to take care of us. But that's not always what I really want. That's not always what I want to do in life. But it's like when you have a state in emergency, when you have a curfew, you have when you're a curfew or a state of emergency in any nation, you don't go dancing, you don't go singing, you don't go to the park. There's a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. So you live safe, but you have no taste for your life. You live safe, but you are in a small part. You are under curfew. You are under the state of emergency. Right. You are under the big thing which is bringing the self out and the self bring it with it. It's about fear.
Right.
Fear
is the biggest thing, I think, that creates civilizations. It's what creates tribes. It creates government. It creates things, because when people say, I have to do this because there's a potential that all of this dogma that was written, you know, is the fear, then everybody tends to live in a life of underneath an awning, so to speak. In other words, I don't want to skip getting a vaccination because the flu might kill me, you know, or I don't want to speak my voice because it might be unkind words. You know, we run in fear, and then we get tied up in all of these paradigms. I think pretty much, can we live a life free of fear? Or perhaps are we living a life of conditional fear?
That's a good expression, conditional fear. I like that. By the way, I learned from every and each conversation about the book, so I learned this from you now, Dr. Janet. Conditional fear, I like it.
Right, because, conditional fear, because conditional fear might mean that I have to exist in this earth space, so I need to live with conditional fear. But can I live with unconditional fear? I don't know. Unconditional fear is almost that which dances in our heart and our soul and our mind. So kind of like a duality that we're trying to exist. It would be similar to a spiritual in a physical life. It's kind of a, you know, are we living parts of ourselves in different spaces, and are we bringing it together? I think that really is the answer right there of your whole book.
I believe this is a choice by itself. This is a choice to live under fear or not. It's our choice. Not having this choice, it's a choice by itself. Fear is the main value for self and for the ego. And when we are living all under the fear, so we will make an unconditional agreement that we won't name the fear. We'll name it other name. But what's happening is that when I am, let's see what it affects us. We live under fear. We live our life like it is a battle. Maybe a cold battle, but it's a battle I need to win. I have to win this battle. I have to win the battle of the work. I have to go there and fight for my future, my salary, and for my company. I have to fight for my children. Not a fight, but a meaningful fight that we are going to fight each other, but the feeling inside me that I'm in a battle, and I need to win. Because if I don't win, I will lose.
Here's where I think people, it's almost like, let's step off into this journey. And I think we get the idea that there's choices. But, you know, I think some people don't even know they have a choice in the first place. So, in other words, you can choose either way. But some people don't even believe they have that choice. So I think that that's where fear and ego have constructed your life versus belief, hope, faith, God, potential, and a universal look at your existence is really what is different.
Yes, I think here we have three choices, not only two choices. I can live in fear under the control of my ego, collective ego or individual ego, under self-centeredness. So I live my life in fear. Or I can liberate. I get liberated from myself. I am very, very contained, very sure of myself. But I do so, and God has nothing to do with it. I am doing so because I believe in some noble values. I live under noble values, which may help me to be liberated from myself. The third choice of that I am getting, I am not afraid, I am not liberated from myself and from fear, because I am leaning into God. I am leaning my back on God. I feel that God is always with me. So this is three choices, not only two. The first two is under self-centeredness, because under self-centeredness I can live life under fear, or can liberate it from my fear. But God has nothing to do with that. I even don't believe in God, but I believe in values, and these values support me. Or can I have to be believing God, and then God support me? When God is in the situation or in my life, love come, because God is about love and mercy. And when I have love and mercy coming to me, that will make me feel tranquil, peace, and also I'll be radiating this love and mercy and peace and tranquil.
Right. Let's talk for a second about humanity versus divinity that you share in your book. When I think of this, you know, when I see after a natural disaster, I'll use that as an example, everybody decided to start helping, and yet they came with their own beliefs, their own way in which they expected it to play out, and then they imposed those beliefs on how to expect it, and they imposed it on others, when others were saying, that wasn't really what I needed was something else. that's really your game you're playing. So sometimes when we see people who are, sometimes we say people are, they're coming to help. They're coming, they're being compassionate. They're being giving. You know, I liken this back, and I've said it many times on the radio, is after Katrina, is that people would come into the area and they wanted to build everyone a house. It had to have air conditioning. It had to have four walls. It needed to have the washer and dryer and a washer and dryer room and similar things like this. Yet people here who lived in New Orleans, many had homes that were four walls, but they had a lot of creaks and cracks, and the vines and the flowers used to grow into the homes. They had no air conditioning. They were built up on stilts, and the washer and the dryer, well, they really didn't have one, or if they did, it might have been outside. And that was the way and the existence that they felt. And that was their existence. So do we go in and say we want to always help people up because we believe that wherever they are is downtrodden? Do you know what I mean? In other words, are we always bringing up humanity? Or are we saying, can we all coexist? That's a big deal, yes?
I think so. And the word is coming to my mind while I was listening to this word, that it's about whom, for whom this support I am doing.
Right.
I am doing this support for you out of humanity, or I'm doing this support for you out of my believing God. I am treating God through you. This is two different ways.
Right.
When I am doing things very good out of humanity, actually I am doing it because at the end it makes me feel good. It makes myself feel good that I am supporting you. When I am doing this for God, I am doing this because this is my divine duty. This is why I'm here. This is why I'm here on this universe. I am here to serve you. I am here to serve the other. I am here to serve all God's creatures because I love them, because I love Him. Not out of humanity. Out of humanity is a very great thing, but this is a path. It's, at the end, it will be because when I do this, I feel good. Myself feel good, which is nothing wrong about that. For the one who is taking this support, there is no difference. The difference is about me. When I'm doing things for God, He is inside me. And when I'm doing things for God to other people, I can see Him inside them. It's a total different life.
You know, it so is. Life. You know, I think it back on many times in my life, and I would do things, and I did not calculate in my mind prior, or I didn't have a sentence. I didn't formulate a thought pattern in my mind before I did it. Formulate, I'm going to do this because, or I must do this because. It was just, in other words, you almost find when you're on that path, it just appears, you follow through, and then it occurs. It's almost like when you put one foot in front of the other and you don't think about all the muscles that you have to line up or what you're going to encounter before one step to the next. It just appears. And it's just, to me, I always call it dancing with life or filling it with grace or moving through and dancing with the world around you, because it just, it's not resistance. It's not, it doesn't have a before, a middle, and an end. It's just there, yes?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. We have the goodness inside of us. We have it. It will go. That's why I am, in this book, I'm trying to encourage the readers to go back and to choose which sky they will be living under, God's sky or self's sky. You don't, when you choose your path, you will be always doing these things to God. You don't have to be aware of conscious about that, because you make, it's a path. You choose the path. And actually, you won't be all doing all things right all the way. You will have your mistakes. You'll have your sometimes your the self will conquer you and grab you, and the ego will. But you will. You have your resistance and put them back right in their places. The thing is, when I am not choosing the path, that when the self and the ego are in control of me, I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that. But in the other path, the God's and reason path, I will feel regret that sometimes my ego is attacking somebody else, or myself is it's not doing the right thing. I will always have a review. I will always have a feedback with myself. I will always have to sit and think, why did so? Who was driving that minute? My soul or myself?
Right.
Oh, I wasn't right in that. So next time I will do it right. When I say that we are going to the path of guns and treason, we are not going to be angels. We are humans. We are meant to do mistakes. We are meant to do two things, but as humans under God's interest, we are meant to say we are sorry. Help us.
Mm-hmm.
You create us, and you create us as humans whom can sin. So help us not. The next time, I'll be more stronger. I won't be weak. Help me. But we never are going to be angels.
Right. And I think it's also, too, to have gratitude and to honor the process, because sometimes we forget that people say, oh, well, you know, I'm doing the spiritual path. I'm good to go. I'm all this. I'm all that, you know. And even in your book, you talk about, you know, interpersonal relationships. You know, we say every man for himself, or, you know, or smart, and people, you know, are winning. And gosh, I see this so much these days, that people are saying, you have to have a passion. You have to have a drive. You get out your vision board, make it happen. And it's like, I sometimes just stand there with my mouth open, because there are no words for some of this. Because I get it in a sense, but it's sort of like, I'm not quite sure. So I step back, and I just know that that's pretty much more of a self-centeredness type of idea, is that if you write it down, if you create it, if you manifest it, if you make it, it's going to show up, and it's going to it again, you know? So then you're living in a self-it type life, you know? Because there's always an it that's driving you, yes?
Yes. When what you are just talking about now, about the self, mm-hmm. is how to live under self-centeredness. Because when we are pushing God out of our life, putting him onto that holy places, it's all about me. It's all about me. I am my only resources. So I have to sharpen this resource, because it's all about me. I am the only one who supports myself. And in this way of thinking, we will feel that the summit of success is the summit of winning is very narrow. There's only mm-hmm. one winner. So I have to be me. That will make my life very, very, even if I do, even I win, but my life is a battle. On the other hand, when I'm living under God's interest, I have the feeling of scarcity. There is a lot. God has a lot. I need to win this game, but I need not to win it. I need to succeed in this game. And the summit of success is much, much more broader than winning.
Mm-hmm.
It can have all of us success. We don't have to be in such hurry. We don't have to be such nervous. We don't have to be that. I am relying on God's resources, and in the same time, God is my resource. He is my backup. I am not the only support of me. He is my support. He is the one that supports me. He's the one that I get my energy from. He's the one. I trust him that he will do things good for me. I trust that I will do things the way he want me to do it. I trust that I have to work hard, but I know in the end what will happen in the end. He gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
When under self-centeredness, I don't trust God. I believe in it, but I don't trust Him. I trust myself. I don't trust that He will support me. I trust that I will support myself. I don't trust that He will help me. I trust that I will help myself. He is there, but He is very small. I am big. He is not big.
Right.
And this is a very, very tiring way of living. We are not meant to live in this life with our self-support. We are very, very weak and very limited. He is very big and undefined and unlimited by His resources, power, and love, whatever it is. So the origin of our life is to be living under His support, with His support. Otherwise, it's a very tiring life. Even if I am a winner, but I am tired. Life is a battle. I am tired. I need support. When I am tired, I go to Him to have some spiritual support. I go to meditation, I go to yoga, I go to have some coaching, which is a very brilliant things, but it's a very tiring life. There's no peaceful. There is no tranquility. There is no love in this life. There is some emotions, but there is no deep love.
You know, it's almost like they've got it backwards, because when we are thinking of self, we are actually looking outside of ourselves for those things to create what we believe is self. But yet, when we are believing with God with us, is that the God, concept, it's really our God is inside of us. We are, the God is inside of us, and that is us. And if we're working from that mechanism, it's not the idea of self. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like we get it, is it us, and we bring things from outside in to create us, or is it really we are creating from within us, from
great.
You know?
Just great what you have been saying. The word outside and the word inside is brilliant. The ego, under self-centeredness, the ego are active. And the ego is always about outside. It's always about the other, how the other will deal with me, how the other is looking at me, how the other is comparing himself to me, or how am I comparing myself to the other. Let me give a small example about beauty and luxury. We built to enjoy beauty. We enjoy a beautiful scene. We enjoy to listen to good music, to enjoy to listen to the birds. We enjoy to taste, we enjoy to smell. We have our five senses, which will take us to enjoy beauty. And when we have enjoy beauty, this is for our heart. It's a beauty. It softens our heart, makes us feel everything in a deeper way of enjoyment, of joy. Luxury, it's a beauty, but for the other. When I am in the luxury thing, I need to have this beautiful thing because I want the other to see that I have a beautiful thing. I need
right.
the other to see that I have a beautiful car. I need the other to see that I have a beautiful house. I need the other to see that I have a beautiful dress. I need the other to see that I have a beautiful ring. I need the other to the other.
Mm-hmm.
The other. This is the work of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
It is beauty, but it's not for me. It's for the other. When I do so, I am living brilliantly under self-centeredness. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not enjoying the beauty that I am paying a lot for it, because it's not for me, it's for the other. And when I have this beautiful car, I will see if other people will make better car, so my friend has it, I need to have it. It's all about how the other. I was just saying, I saw an advertisement about a car. It was about people will always look at you while in this car. This is not supposed to go to be. It's supposed to be. I must to enjoy it, to have it. When I'm always looking about the other, this is the self is here big. And when the self is here and big, it is like a shelter between me and God. On the other hand, when I am enjoying beauty, I am softening my heart. When I am softening my heart, that I am preparing it, that God, to be in it, if I choose to. Mm-hmm. If I choose so. God will never go to a solid heart, a hard and stiff heart is always about the others, about the self. So when there is the word that you said, that the outside is the playground of the ego. What's
right.
happening from outside? There is a threat. People will. I need to show people that I am rich, a good mm-hmm. car, good house, good. I need to show people that I am intelligent, so I have to talk in a such way. I have to show my accreditation. There is no joy in this life. There is no peace. There is no tranquility.
Right.
When I have the beauty I'm living under God, I enjoy. I enjoy the simple thing because it's between me and God. There is no other in this formula.
You know, it's the funniest thing. When you were just talking, it was just like, I was hoping I didn't forget my thought. Of times when people would say to me, you're not a good representation of this. You don't belong here. Oh my gosh, you need to drop out. The place isn't for you. And what they were really saying was is that they had created such a silo, such a story, that they couldn't get past the story to be able to see something greater of the good. And it was such a limited belief. I went, whoa, stood back, you know. It was like, whoa, I felt that. I mean, you almost energetically feel it when someone says something like that because you go, oh, my gosh, they're living from a limited belief, you know. And you go,
yeah.
Oh, wow, that was something, you know. And I think it's really interesting, once you seriously get into this, you'll start noticing, when you start asking questions or experiencing different things, you'll say, ooh, I felt that. Ooh, you know, and you almost get to be like that little one that's always going, you know, and because you see how the magic of the world is playing out around you, yes?
Yes, you just said it. You do your work and you don't feel that you need accreditation from others. Whatever they say, whatever they will look at you, it doesn't matter to you.
Mm-hmm.
They will always talk about you. They will always see you. But it's, what's this for you? What this? How will this affect you? It make all the difference. When it doesn't affect you, when you don't, you feel that there is no need for that accreditation from them. You are living your life. You are living really, really calm, peace. You are enjoying your life much more than them. You
well,
need
you're
them.
Really leaving. You're living your God-centered life. You're not living your world to outside parameters. So it's really, are you living from your inner being that you're being in this God life, or are you going to be a marker on a game puzzle going around the things, because that's what your limitations are, yes?
Absolutely. When you say that I am living by my inner self, I believe your inner self, when you are aware, that you feel that you are full of God. God is inside
mm-hmm.
you.
Right.
If you are not aware of that, you will always try to fill yourself with other substance and other components, and that will never happen. Whatever you try, you fill yourself with things, with thoughts, with anything but God into your heart, you will always feel empty. And when you will always feel empty, you will always reaching for the outside. When you are aware that you are full, your God is in your heart, you feel that you are full. Anything outside you want, you don't need. But if you are full, if you are God is not your heart, you will always feel that you need, not want. And there's a big difference between the want and the need. When you are full, you want. If he doesn't have it, it doesn't matter. When you are hungry and you eat, you are full. Yeah, maybe I'll take some dessert. I want some dessert.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no dessert, no problem. But if you are hungry, you need to eat.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk again a little bit in closing on that. I had written something down, and I said that when you need to nourish yourself, you need safety and security, and you need the basics. But then let's talk for 1 second about poverty, minimal survival versus living in an abundant universe. And that will take us right back to the beginning of this conversation when I spoke about the homeless people. They have food. People are giving them food. They create their own shelter. They have their own sense of stability, and they have their own place in the world. Yet we look at it that that's poverty, that that doesn't show up as our way of what we believe living is. So I don't think that anyone can reflect the same type of living in an abundant universe in saying that it's all the same. In other words, there is no zero point, and we all are striving for that. It's just how we exist in the universe and being one with it. Yes?
Yes. Let's take a step backward for that and take another step. For me, when I am God, under God's centrism, when I look to people who are in need, homeless or poor, they are my brothers. They are my responsibility. I'm not, it's not, I am not doing this out of generosity. I'm doing this out of duty. They are my brothers and they are for in need. So it's my duty from inside. I take care of them. This is as God's messengers for me. God doesn't need anything from us, but he sent us messengers that we can deal with him through them. So this is our God messengers. This is us, not poor people. This is not our needy people. This is our God messengers. This is our God ambassadors. This is how I look at them.
Referring back to when people come to help, there's many times people will come to help and they want to fix you, solutionize you, diagnose you, or categorize you. And many times, and I always use the phrase, but I didn't ask you for that. And what I'm asking sometimes when people are saying that they're in pain, they aren't asking for you to fix them. They're just saying, I wish to be heard. When people are saying, I lost everything that I had, they're not asking you to give them all of it back and create something. They're just saying, can you hear me? Can you feel my loss? Other times people will say, I just lost someone. They're not asking you for you to give them all of your sympathy. What they're asking you for is, can you just sit and be one with me and help me just feel in the moment to be connected to someone? So I think sometimes the ideas that we always have to solutionize is so different. And actually to be able to say, can we just sit and be present with someone? Whoa, what a concept, Jess.
Absolutely. It's about how I look to the other, how I see them, and how I look to them and how I see them. It will depend which paradigm I'm under. I'm out of self-centeredness or I am God-centered. When I am, that's a feeling, this metaphor, under self-centeredness, I feel that I am a tree, and this tree has fruits, and part of these fruits I will share with the others.
Mm-hmm.
Under God-centeredness, I am not a tree. I am a full plantation. I'm big.
Right.
I'm big. And I feel inside that I don't own myself. This plantation, mm-hmm. which is me, it's not belong to me. It's not my ownership. It has mm-hmm. an owner, which is God. So when I share with that, I am sharing what's not me. I'm just having the power of attorney in me, for me and what I have. Under self-centeredness, my helping to others is a mission. I have to accomplish it. But under God-centeredness, helping others, it is my way to live. all my life is that I am serving others, and me and mine are part of these others.
Right.
These two different perspectives to look at things first and then to deal with it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, actually, when I was just sharing my story, is when I sit with it, it's almost like I am just sharing, you're sharing the God from within. That's what you're doing. You're really giving from within.
I have to interrupt. This is beautiful word. This is beautiful what you have just said. This is really beautiful. This is what it's all about. I am sharing God from within. That's all it's all about. I'm sorry that interrupted, but I couldn't. That's it.
Absolutely. And it's because, and also too, you have no ownership of, quote, it. It just comes through you. In other words, it's, God just comes through you, and there isn't that you refine it, that you have to classify it, that you have to say, oh, this is God coming through. No, you just have to sit and allow the flow to be able to be there. It's almost like just, I mean, gosh, the flowers just, all of a sudden, hey, they just open up and they shine up to the sun. How cool is that? So it's almost like you just show up, you be present, just be open, and just don't worry so much, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. When you have God in the center of your life, you feel that everything you have is coming from God through you. And you do your best that you will make it back to Him through others. So everything from God, this is awareness. You have to do what you can do to make it for God or to God through others. So everything from God and to God. Your success, your family, your wealth, your health, everything. It's from God. It's a God's gift to you. So you will try to best do it to pay it back to Him through others.
Right.
This is a beautiful life to live. This is the real life to live, really. And this paradigm, God's in place, there's a very, very, very important way to question yourself when there is a loss.
Mm-hmm.
When under self-centeredness, when you have a loss, the question is coming to your mind is, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why this happened to me? If you are aware, you will take yourself under God's interest. The question will be, what do you want from me by this situation? What is the message that you are sending to me by this loss? What do you want from me? What do you want me to use myself for you as? The questions, why me, will disappear. And instead of it will come the questions, what do you want of me by this situation that you are putting me in? This is two questions lead to a two different path. The questions of why me will drive me to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
The victim square.
Mm-hmm.
The path of what you want of me will lead me to the wise path square.
You know, when I get to that point when things come up, I would say, oh, cool, what's up with this? And then I kind of like look at it like a child, like a new experience, because you know what? All we can have is experiences. If we keep holding them off and saying, oh, crap, I just, you know, what, I must have done something wrong, then we kind of get into that stuck point. Well, we've come to the end of time for today, but we stay tuned, everyone, for our second show. So thank you so much for joining us today. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you?
Yes, I have a page on Facebook. It's author Wael Burhan. Shall I spell it, or you'll have it on your
I have it on the link.
Okay, I have it. And the book the paper copy will be on the bookstores on the 27th of March. But now it is available as an e-book, electronic book. You'll find it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. Books are million. You'll find it there. And we can discuss all your questions through the Facebook page. And I think in the next 2 weeks, we'll have a lot of video on a YouTube channel, and we'll be announcing about that on the on Facebook.
Well, it was such a pleasure to have you here today, and we will continue this discussion in our next show. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, because I learned a lot from you. Thank you for teaching me.
Thank you. Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about the guest today, Wael Borhan, please do check on the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you go directly to Facebook to be able to find out more information and join us for our second show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.